The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia. Visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
And away we go. It's another edition of the Arrowhead Pride Editor's Show. I'm the editor-in-chief at arrowheadpride.com, Pete Sweeney, joined, as always, by my esteemed deputy editor, John Dixon. John, already, it's Tuesday, September 14th. Have you gotten your first pumpkin spice latte of the season yet?
No.
Okay.
I don't ever get one of those.
You don't like pumpkin spice?
No.
I'm
not a coffee drinker. I'm not one of those guys that drinks coffee.
I forgot.
I'm that guy.
I forgot that you like Coca-Cola in the morning.
Yeah.
Is it Coca-Cola or Pepsi? Which one?
It's Diet Coke these days. I was a Pepsi aficionado on the diet side until they stopped using aspartame.
Okay.
And then it became terrible.
That's good to know. I have a useless piece of information myself. I don't know how I know this. I'm probably not supposed to know this, but Andy Reid is a big Coke Zero drinker. So
if
you want to follow in the path of the Chiefs head coach, that's how you do it. Listen, we got a great Arrowhead Pride Editor show for you. Today, we'll go over the latest in the Chiefs news. We got some snap count takeaways now that the snap counts have been revealed from this Chiefs win over the Browns. Andy Reid spoke to the media on Monday. You'd know that if you listen to the Arrowhead Pride Podcast Network. We have it on From the Podium. And then in our final segment, we'll have the world famous marinated takeaways because we actually have a game this week to talk about. And we'll finish up with a popular segment, the best Chiefs thing we heard all week. It's a jam-packed show. If you like the Arrowhead Pride Editor Show, if you like the Arrowhead Pride Podcast Network, as always, please go ahead and leave us a rating and review, Spotify, iTunes. I'm not sure if you can leave a review on Spotify, but you can certainly leave one on Apple iTunes. We prefer 5 stars and complain about John all you want. Compliment me. That's the thing we want to do with these reviews.
That's how that works. Yeah. Everybody thinks I was old. I don't get that.
No, you are a young man, right? You are ripe. You're 39 years old. I don't know what everyone's talking about.
No, I'm not, but okay.
All right. That's enough. We have dilly-dallied enough. What are we? We're at 2 minutes already. Let's get into the news. And it starts with Patrick Mahomes, and he's made this a weekly occurrence, seemingly. Patrick Mahomes nominated for the FedEx Air NFL Player of the Week. John, you covered this for us at arrowheadpride.com. What does this even mean? What is it? What are we talking about here?
Well, this is just a thing that FedEx sponsors for the NFL, and the winner of the voting each week gets a donation made to historically black colleges and universities in their name, $2,000. So that's cool. And they pick 3 players, oddly enough, not including the Monday night game. I don't know what that's about. The games from Thursday through Sunday, they nominate a quarterback and a running back as the air and ground players. Mahomes has won this thing several times, most notably in 2018 when he won it 3 times and then was named the FedEx Air Player of the Week for the whole year after winning it 3 times during the season. I think he just won it once in 2019, but not at all last season. So this is good. This is a step forward that he's put in a big statistical game and he's getting recognition for it.
Now, this voting is open, as I'm reading, until Wednesday at 2 p.m. Arrowhead time. So plenty of time to get that in. We have the link up at arrowheadpride.com. You'll see it right there. Patrick Mahomes nominated for FedEx Air NFL Player of the Week. I think he deserves it. Right now, he's going up against Tom Brady. Boo, Dak Prescott. Boo. No Chiefs nominated for the Ground Player of the Week. That goes to Joe Mixon, David Montgomery, and Melvin Gordon. The numbers on these guys, 27 of 36 for 337 and three touchdowns for Pat. Tom Brady, 32 of 50 for 379 yards and four touchdowns versus the Cowboys. But nobody's going to vote for Tom Brady. Come on. And then Dak Prescott in his own right, 42 of 58 for 403 yards and three touchdowns. I didn't even realize this. Combined with Brady and Prescott, who played each other on Thursday night, that's 108 passes in that game, John.
Yeah. Yeah, they really tore it up on Thursday night this week, which is just what the NFL loves to see. Lots of passing is exciting for most fans. So the NFL is certainly happy with that result.
I don't know about this voting. I'm telling you, I can already tell Dak is going to win this. Dak is going to be the sentimental favorite. People, I think, obviously have Tom Brady fatigue. I think there's a little national Patrick Mahomes fatigue starting to set in, where Dak Prescott seems to really have, I would say, when you're not a fan of the team, some of that fanfare going on a little bit with him. So there you go. The FedEx Air NFL Player of the Week. The team, the Chiefs I'm talking about now, they signed a developmental tight end. And for years, we had made fun of Demetrius Harris and the fact that announcers would always talk about how he was a collegiate basketball player and was learning the football. Something similar happened with this new Kansas City Chief to the practice squad. His name is Mark Vital Jr., a vital addition to the Kansas City Chiefs. I'll be here all week, John.
Let's hope not. No, okay. Yeah, this is interesting. And I saw someone note yesterday, this is like Tony Gonzalez. Well, not quite. Tony Gonzalez played basketball.
You're telling me this practice squad tight end is not Tony J? Okay.
No, you want to say that? Okay. Gonzalez played basketball in college, but he didn't specialize in basketball at college. At the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, they don't even have a football program, which is where Demetrius Harris played. And and of course, Baylor has a football team, but Vital didn't play on the football team in college. He did play some high school ball, but you know, it's been a while since he'd done that. So this is just about converting that basketball skill to the pro football NFL tight end position, which, you know, sometimes works well. It did for Harris. He didn't become Tony Gonzalez, but he was an effective player for the Chiefs and has remained in the league since he left the Chiefs. So we'll see how this works out.
Yeah, well, it's going to be tough to break through, I think, this year. This is probably a project you're talking about for years to come. And you're right about Demetrius Harris in the sense that he wasn't necessarily a world beater, but he was a nice tight end behind Travis Kelce. And who knows, how does Vital even fit on this team where you have a guy like Jody Fortson and Noah Gray, and they're very young and on the come up here. But you always add talent where you see it, because you get to a situation where, let's talk next preseason. Vital's now had a year learning from Andy Reid and Tom Melvin, and you get to training camp and you have a guy that is similar to Fortson. Okay, so maybe next year you keep Travis Kelce, Noah Gray, and Jody Fortson on the 2022 roster. But this Vital guy, he happened to pop on tape. Boom, flip it for a sixth rounder, extra draft pick for the Chiefs. So there's always reason to add talent, I think, onto the roster. So Mark Vital, a name that you should watch for in the distant, let's say the distant future, unless there is a terrible injury situation in the tight end room, which we don't want to talk about. So let's get on to the snap count takeaways. A 33-29 victory, the Chiefs defeating the Cleveland Browns in the first game. It was a thriller on Sunday. We're going to talk more about that game later, but let's dig into the snap counts and what we learned about the team first and foremost, John.
Well, we'll have to emphasize and talk about only the offense here. That's as far as I've gotten into the detailed snap counts we use for our analysis. But there were several things that were interesting about it. Obviously, we expected the offensive line to include three rookies. That's what they started for week one of the season. They all played all the snaps. All of the backup offensive linemen played except for Andrew Wiley. But they got their snaps in on special teams, except for Mike Remmers, who was in for that one play, the tackle-eligible play that the Browns blew up. The other interesting thing that I think we saw in the offense was at running back, where obviously Clyde Edwards-Helaire was the bell cow of the offense, but he was on the field for the same proportion of running and passing plays. We haven't always seen this. Sometimes we have seen the lead running back used more often on running plays than on passing plays, but Edwards-Helaire, Williams, and Jerick McKinnon behind him,
yeah,
all were on the field for pretty much the same proportion of running and passing plays. So what that tells us is that the Chiefs aren't
tells us Andy Reid is reading your snap count article. I want you to stop revealing it.
What this tells us that at least for this game, the Chiefs weren't putting a specific running back out there on the field in a passing situation because they felt that the normal running back couldn't handle it. So this suggests that they are trusting Edwards-Helaire as a pass protector, and also that they're using him in the passing game more than they would have in previous seasons. So I thought that was one of the interesting takeaways.
Yeah, I love when the data matches the press conference, because sometimes you get out of the press conference and you're like, are you sure that you really trust Clyde Edwards-Helaire to pass protect? But the numbers do show that. I thought it was interesting here, John, with the DeMarcus Robinson number. We were wondering, would the Chiefs finally replace Robinson and some of the snaps that he got with Byron Pringle? But it looked like it was in the 40s to what Byron Pringle having 11 or 12 snaps there.
Right. Yeah. And again, you know, you pay attention to how they are used in running and passing situations, which we can do with the data that we get to do this, which is different than what the NFL puts out in the game books, which is what you typically see.
Right.
Both Hill and Robinson were used pretty equally on running and passing plays, but the reserve wide receivers were used mostly on passing plays. So, you know, what that tells you is that Hill and Robinson are the starters at this point, and everybody else is behind them.
Yeah. Interesting. I really didn't expect that in watching training camp, but the Chiefs continue to trust Robinson, who for years the coaching staff would compliment as to knowing the playbook. So, again, we are speculating here from pure numbers, but Byron Pringle, who knows if maybe he has a complicated time learning what would be everything Robinson does. Mecole Hardman actually had less snaps than Robinson. I know that, John, you're still working on the defense, but pulling up the game book, I thought it was telling, both from a year-by-year comparison, Bolton to Gay, and then Bolton to Neiman just in general. You don't have Willie Gay in this game. Bolton outsnaps Ben Neiman 45 to 40. And so that shows that the coaching staff really had trust and really saw enough to throw him into the fire in this game.
Right. And I think when we finally get the snap counts data accumulated and written up on Arrowhead Pride, you're going to see some interesting breakdowns on how those linebackers were used in running versus passing situations. But we haven't gotten there yet. I'll pull back the curtain a little bit. Normally, we get this information, this detailed information that we use for our snap counts analysis, on the day after the game. But for reasons that are yet unknown to us, it's been delayed this year. And we are arguing with the NFL to get it out sooner for the next week.
While we're complaining about the NFL, we have a wide variety of individuals as part of this Arrowhead Pride team. Ron Kopp lives in America. Tom Childs lives in the UK. And Tom has access to the All 22 at this point. But Ron, our lead analyst, still dealing with the broadcast film. What is going on, NFL?
What is that about?
This
goodness
is supposed
gracious
to be worked out in the preseason. What are we doing, NFL? Okay, that's enough complaining about the league.
Well, Ron has one advantage that Tom doesn't, because Ron was actually at the game.
No accent? Okay.
Yeah, which Tom, of course, was not living in London. But Ron was not only at the game, but he actually appeared briefly on television. Yes. Which was very funny for us, because in our little private Slack chat among the Arrowhead Pride staff, it blew up the minute he showed up on TV. Was that Ron Kopp? And it turns out that it was.
I believe they've been discussing us on Twitter. So if you want to see Ron Kopp in full fan form, great analyst for us, but he went full fan on Sunday. He's jumping around at the game, part of what was a very loud Arrowhead Stadium that really impacted the game. Especially on that punt. Perhaps we'll get into that in our marinated takeaways in segment 3. Ron, came at me after the game. Game ends about 7:30. Says, I'm thinking about writing an article tonight. And I didn't hear from him. And he told me that he got food poisoning from the Arrowhead Stadium.
Oh,
food.
Really? Oh, that no.
That video on CBS did not look like someone with food poisoning. Luckily, Ron can't comment on this until next week's Arrowhead Pride Out of Structure. I'm sure he'll have something to say about that. But he does a great job. He had a great article for us up this morning discussing what was Chris Jones's comments about this game, Mike Hughes's comments about this game. And we love Ron. Great member of our Arrowhead Pride team.
He is indeed. Yep.
Okay, that's it for the news. Not really a ton of breaking news early on in the week when you start to enter the NFL season, because things are extremely buttoned up until what would be Wednesday when we get our first injury report for the Chiefs and the Ravens. So we'll take a quick break. When we come back, we will go over Andy Reid's press conference from Monday. Stay with us right here on the Arrowhead Pride Editors Show. Back here on the Arrowhead Pride Editor's Show, Pete Sweeney, John Dixon coming at you after the Chiefs' first game of the season, a 33-29 victory over the vaunted Cleveland Browns, who are supposed to be in tier two on the come up in the AFC. We're supposed to knock off the Kansas City Chiefs, but if you're going to knock off the Kansas City Chiefs, you got to play for 60 minutes, not 53, Baker Mayfield. What are we doing? All right. Andy Reid spoke about the game after watching the film, and the first quote that we'll play for you was not really about anything stemming from the game, but it was stemming from before the game. Andy Reid making the call to hold out defensive end Frank Clark, who had been dealing with a hamstring. Safety Tyrann Mathieu had been away for the team for about 2 weeks as he was on the COVID-19 list. Here's the head coach.
I think he was right on the edge of being right. He pushed himself this week. And I just didn't, you know, I didn't feel like it was quite all the way back with him. And so, rather than take steps back with him, you're right. We've been working with this, trying to make sure he gets it right. And, it's not lack of effort or want to play or any of that stuff. It's just a decision I have to make sitting in this chair along with the medical people feeding me the information and Frank communicate. So, with us. And I just thought that was the best way to go. As I'm sitting here right now, I haven't met with the medical people, but yes, he'll be back, and that again. That was a decision I had to make, and that was more off of the conditioning part, and just not putting him in a bad position. So that was a little different than Frank's, but kind of that same thinking that I thought it was best if we just kind of sit this game and come back for the next one here.
So from those quotes, John, to me, it sounds like these two players will finally definitely be available for the Baltimore Ravens come Sunday Night Football.
Yeah, in each case, it sounded like the coaching staff made a decision that the players didn't necessarily agree with. They said, but I like this about the Chiefs, that they're always thinking about the long term. You know, yes, Cleveland is a tough opponent. You want to have your best players on the field for that. But we have to be concerned about the whole season. And so it makes sense to them to let both of these guys rest for another week so that they'll be ready to go and perhaps play for more games than they would if they had played in week one. So I appreciate that in the Chiefs, that they're always thinking about the long-term consequences of the decisions that they make.
One of my favorite sports figures in general comes to mind when you hear a situation like this, and that's Coach Pop of the San Antonio Spurs, Greg Popovich. And I'll tell you, John, I know you're not a big NBA fan, but something he'll do, especially in the mid to the late season, is say, all right, veteran players, just stay in San Antonio. We'll go and maybe lose to the Los Angeles Lakers. And it ticks the NBA off because all these Laker fans have bought these tickets to see the best players on the team. But he doesn't care, because he knows that he is judged by what? The record and getting a high enough seed. And if he feels his seed is good enough, but more importantly, how you do in the postseason. And sure. Guess what? That's where we're at in Kansas City, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
Not to say that Andy Reid would have been comfortable losing this game, but he sees what's going on here. There's an extra game this year. It's a 17-game season. Why have a setback for Frank Clark, who you are going to need, hate to say this, but you're going to need to win in the playoffs. And then Tyrann Mathieu probably, maybe you can make a case for Jones, but probably is your most important defensive player. If there's anything a little off with him, why put him in a position where he can't succeed, where he may get injured, where he's not ready, maybe looks bad? Hold him back, take it out of the hands of the player, and he'll be back stronger next week.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it was a wise move. It's not maybe one I would have made. I don't know if I'd be that brave to make that move. But Andy Reid was, and I think it's a credit to him that he was, you know, had the chutzpah to do it.
And the Chiefs suffered without Matthew, especially in the first half. I'm eager to talk to Steve Spagnuolo on Thursday. I can already predict how this is going to go down. I'm going to ask about last game. He's going to get confused because he's so forward thinking. He's always said that. I don't even think about last game. And we don't get the coordinators until Thursday. So I'm going to try to preface it. If you listen to From the Podium, you'll hear me as I try to preface it on Thursday. Coach, I know you're thinking about the Ravens, but could you dial back and tell me what you did against the Cleveland Browns in the second half? Because I'm curious, in his words, what adjustments they made without Matthew, because it was a lot more successful, as we saw in the second half. Andy Reid also discussed the run game. There was one weakness to the offense on Sunday. It was the run game. Clyde, as you mentioned, he rushed 14 times for 43 yards, which I used a calculator on. This is about 3 yards per attempt. Here was Andy Reid.
Yeah, I think just the physical part of it with that defensive line, they were rolling there pretty good the first half. And I just thought that we needed to, bear down just a little bit more with our young offensive line and give them an opportunity to, you know, establish something there and that was strong. And so decided to run the football a little bit and give them an opportunity to come off and work the physical part of the game a little bit more.
And then, as you would hear, my question was, okay, how would you say the offensive line did in the run game? Here's Reid again.
Yeah. Well, I thought we came off and we got bodies on bodies. I thought we did a pretty good job with that. I think we've got to just coordinate a little bit more with the line and then the running back and how they're going about their business together. I think that becomes important. The runners can set things up better, or the O-line needs to have an idea where that better idea of what the running back's trying to get done with his part. And so I've got to make sure that I get that straightened out as we go. And between Andy Heck and EB and Greg, I mean, that group right there has a pretty good understanding of it, right? A lot of years as running backs and offensive linemen within that group there. So I have confidence I'll get taken care of.
So I think some growing pains here with the offensive line and the run game, and that is to be expected not only when it's three rookies, which we have talked about ad nauseum here on this network, but also in the sense that while Orlando Brown and Joe Tooney are world-class at what they do, this is five new players playing with one another. And they're not only playing with one another, they're also playing with a new running back. And so Andy Reid happy, it sounds like, with the one-on-one contact, but they just need to get in sync with the movement of Edwards-Helaire. And so this is a work in progress, and I think we'll see this have more success as we go, John.
I completely agree. As you know, I was in They Won't Start Three Rookies camp all off season, and I was a late convert to this. But now that they've made the decision to do this, which is, a smart, long-term decision for the franchise, another example of the Chiefs thinking about the long-term here, it's going to take a little time for these players to really play at the level they're capable of playing. And I think we need to give them a little slack for that. But, you know, honestly, I thought the difference between the first half and the second half was pretty noticeable. In the offensive line, it seemed like just in one half of football, they solved some problems and made things a little better. So that's a good sign, but I think we'll see more of that as the opening games of the season go on. And I think we're going to see a really good unit by the time the postseason gets here.
Yeah, I don't think it's worth it for you to beat yourself up about the O-line. I think it shocked a lot of us. Andy Reid in the past he's tended to go with veterans along the line, at least to start the year. And so this was very different than what he usually does. I remember we did a headlines section. We tried to predict headlines that would be shocking to us or bold. And one of the things I was trying to be bold about was, man, how cool would it be if the Chiefs started three rookies on the offensive line? Making fun of myself right now. And it came to fruition. And I think it was just as shocking to me as it was to you. Speaking of the offense and working in Patrick Mahomes and the passing having more success, my goodness, that pass to Tyreek Hill was a game changer.
Yeah.
So often we talk about the mind meld between Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce. I think there's a little bit of that with Tyreek Hill, and I think you saw it on display on Sunday at a very important time of the game. Here's Andy Reid on that chemistry.
Yeah, listen, it's a word thing, sir. And sometimes you see guys that just have a chemistry with one another and kind of can think where the other guy's going to be and what they're thinking when they're throwing. You know, it's just there's a chemistry. And those two have that. But then also Tyreek, you've seen enough of these long balls where he's had to adjust to them and come back to the ball, or he's running all the way across the field on a scramble drill. And he just has a unique feel for the ball. He would have been a great center fielder. I mean, he's able to track the ball and is uncanny with that. And he's so fast. When he gets going, you're spending a lot of effort trying to keep up with him, and then he can stop on a dime, and you end up flying by, and he's in position to make the play. So he's a unique character that way.
And I think he's right here. Of course he is, because he's with them every day, and he designs plays for him. But Tyreek Hill, let's talk about one aspect of his game. The tracking, I don't know if there's another wide receiver in the NFL, and going to the top 100, there were three players that were ranked above him. It was Davante Adams, DeAndre Hopkins, and Stephon Diggs. So let's just talk about those players. Great wide receivers. I don't know let's throw Hopkins out of it, because Hopkins might slightly be better. He had that game-winning catch last year. But the other two, I don't know if they're better than Hill at the tracking of the ball,
Yeah.
in the sense of Diggs and Adams with a ball hanging in there, being able to find it and high point it. We saw Hopkins beat the Bills last year on that. So again, I'll give him that there, but Hill's right there in my opinion. And I think we saw that on Sunday. We joked, a friend of Arrowhead Pride, Aaron Ladd, was really bold with his question. Let's just say that in the press conference after the game and said, do you go with the meme? You just say F it and throw it down to Tyreek Hill. And Mahomes was like, sometimes it be like that. And it really looked like that. And he just said, okay, it's Tyreek Hill one-on-one. And because it was like a little underthrown, that actually was a benefit on this one particular play.
Well, I think this is one of those cases where the national narrative kind of affects it even at the local level. You know, Tyreek Hill is just seen as this really fast receiver, as if that's all there is to his game. And we probably feel the same way about other receivers that we know about that are on other teams that we don't follow as closely. And we probably just think about that one thing that they do really well. I don't think the national media has really caught up with how good Hill is at tracking passes, because they're so focused on the speed that he has. And obviously that's a big part of his game. But I think one of the reasons that he's now among the NFL's elite receivers, instead of just being this really speedy guy, is that he's got that ability, and he shows it over and over and over again. And I think Sunday's game was particularly that play, was an excellent example of how good he is at adjusting to the flight of the ball so that he can bring it in.
2020 was the year of Travis Kelce when it came to Kansas City Chiefs making a push to lead the league in receiving. This already feels like Tyreek Hill's year to get close to 2,000 yards. Again, with the extra game, if he can just stay healthy. We talked about the chemistry with Patrick Mahomes. And he's entering, I think, a phase of his career where even if you double him, he is finding ways and has these polished routes and enough to just get away from the opposing defenses. And if that's going to be the case and he has a little bit of room, he's going to be gone. And he said after the game, he felt he left yards on the field. What? He had 197 yards. How many does he want each game? Right. It's just crazy to me. So something to watch as the year goes on. Switching back to the defense, as we wrap up Andy Reid, we talked about Nick Bolton outsnapping Ben Neiman 45-40. Here was Reed's quotes on Nick Bolton.
Yeah, I thought Nick did a pretty good job. He had a couple of real secure tackles that were important for us. It looked like mentally he was able to digest everything that they threw at him. And if he did make a mistake, he fixed it the second time around. So on defense, if you're a repeat offender, man, that could be a tough deal on the defense. So, he's been good with that. And he was good with that in the game.
So Bolton in his debut finishes with 7 tackles for solo. And the one that stuck out to me the most was that early tackle on Nick Chubb, where Nick Chubb looked to have a touchdown, had Bolton not tracked him down. He did later in the game. Shout out to Joshua Kando in his first game. I know that he's a little bit more raw than Bolton, but Bolton wrapped up Nick Chubb, who is one of the better backs and the tougher backs to wrap up in the NFL. And what a test. What a test going against Chubb and Hunt and finding some success. You're not going to face many tougher challenges and players to tackle than these two guys in the NFL.
Oh, I completely agree. And I was very impressed with how Bolton looked in this game. But I've been sneaky confident that we were going to see that kind of play out of Bolton this year.
Yeah.
I'm very pleased to see this happen in the first game. But I think a lot of people have underestimated him because he wasn't the big name linebacker that people wanted the Chiefs to take.
Right.
But I think this is one of those cases where their knowledge of a particular team comes from within. You know, they have a former Missouri coach as the assistant to Dave Tobe. And I think in this case, they got some inside information about Bolton and what he's capable of doing and how he is as a teammate, those kinds of things. And those things matter a lot to the Chiefs. And I think that we're going to see quite a bit out of this player as the season progresses. I'm not happy that Willie Gay is injured, but I'm glad that Bolton is getting this opportunity with his injury to get some time on the field and show people what he can really do.
Yeah, the Mizzou coach you mentioned, Andy Hill, that is a great point by you, just having the experience with Bolton to know. Right. And I think it's fair to say after this game, and granted it's one game, so let's see how he does next week against the Ravens, but I think it's fair to say after this game, he's pretty pro-ready. Which Willie Gay, frankly, wasn't. Might not have been Gay's fault for not having that offseason. Bolton did. But now Gay is going to be champing at the bit to get back involved in this defense. And when he does, you're going to have Hitchens and Bolton and Gay. That is a strong linebacker core, assuming these guys stay healthy. And then you have Neiman, who is a backup / special teams type of guy, which is what he is supposed to be. That's why Neiman gets a bad rap and going back years, that's why Daniel Sorensen, to an extent, got a bad rap, because remember, there was no Tyrann Mathieu in those days when everyone wanted to cut Sorensen. And Eric Berry wouldn't get on the field. And everyone was like, well, why is the safety play suffering? Because he's supposed to be the number two safety. He's supposed to be a backup safety. Same thing with Ben Neiman. Ben Neiman is a fantastic backup linebacker, special team guy, reliable in the NFL, right? It's just, in these recent years, he's been thrown into the fire because of injuries and sometimes gets exploited. So, all right, enough of me defending.
And both of those players made huge plays in this game too.
Agreed. With the fumble recovery and the hit on Baker Mayfield.
They had their moments where they didn't look very good, but they also both made huge key plays in this game, and the game might have come out differently.
I was going to say before I get attacked on Chiefs Reddit now, John, but now you will also be included in that. So thank you for coming down into the fire with
me. I'm always here for you, Pete.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So that wraps up Andy Reid. If you want to listen to the full press conference, it's available right here on the Arrowhead Pride Podcast Network by going to listen to From the Podium. When we come back, it is the world famous Marinated Takeaway. Stay with us right here on the Arrowhead Pride Editors Show. Back here on the Arrowhead Pride Editors Show, wrapping it up, Pete Sweeney, John Dixon. Now that we've had a few days to think about this 33-29 win over the Cleveland Browns, we will give our world famous Marinated Takeaways. John, as we always do, age before beauty. Let's go ahead and start with you.
Yeah, I've been thinking about it, and I hadn't really thought about this much until yesterday, But I think we ought to be really impressed with what the special teams did in Sunday's game. You know, that play where the Browns kicker fumbled the snap. Well, he didn't fumble it. He didn't field it well, and then was running around like an idiot trying to figure out a way to get upfield. the special teams unit did a fantastic job of enveloping him and bringing him down. I mean, that's not the kind of play that really impresses people, but it's the kind of coaching that brings about that kind of play that matters. And I think also, you know, Tommy Townsend did a great job. Harrison Butker was perfect. We saw a couple of examples of why Chris Lammons is on this team. A lot of people were been out of shape because, you know, Tobe once again seemed to have, you know, used his influence with Andy Reid to get a special teams guy on there. But Lammons showed why they wanted him on the team. So right. That's one of the things that really, as I've thought about it, that's one of the things that's impressed me about Sunday's game.
Yeah, with the Lammons addition, you can make a case that that is the reason why the Chiefs lost Tim Ward, who was having some snaps, it sounded like, with the Jets game over the weekend, and the Jets losing to the, who did they lose to? The Carolina Panthers, 19-14, but Ward ended up going to the Jets because the Chiefs kept Lammons. But that's a good point. That's a reason the Chiefs kept him, and you need special teamers. I know it's right. The third phase of the game, and maybe you can make a case for edge depth, but look, the Chiefs were able to get it done. My first marinated takeaway is one that involves Tyrann Mathieu and Chris Jones, and I guess you could call it one bad, one good. It was on full display on Sunday just how critical Tyrann Mathieu is to the defense. They were lost in the first quarter and the second quarter. I talked about the adjustments, and I'm curious as to what exactly they did. But they need Tyrann Mathieu on this field to organize this defense. And it goes into the contract situation. I know that recent reports have said this could get done at the end of this year. We'll see. I wonder how that plays into Orlando Brown with his contract situation set to run out as well. One of these guys only can be franchise tagged. But they either need to figure out a way to get Tyrann Mathieu extended, even though he's approaching the age of 30, or find someone who's going to be able to do what he does when it comes to an organization uplifting standpoint. And I got news for you. There's not a lot of players in the league that are like this guy. He needs to also be here in my mind to mentor that next person. So when you do have to move on to Tyrann Mathieu, because he's not ageless, none of us are ageless, right? You have that player to step up and to take the reins and to make sure the defense does not falter when he is no longer playing. And let's figure out this thing. I know that it is unlikely to happen during the season. It's a way more rare for something to take place during the season, but they cannot under any circumstances let this guy go. They can't. And that gets me to my other point, and this is a little bit more of the good. I think Chris Jones, there have been games when we've expected Chris Jones to step up and be a leader, and he ends up having a quiet day. This, to me, was the game. You don't have Frank Clark. You don't have Tyrann Mathieu, as I just mentioned. Your defense stunk in the first half. You needed to make a big play, and that sack set the tone and was huge when it came to the comeback. And so we talk about Anthony Hitchens as a leader. We talk about Tyrann Mathieu as a leader. This was a leadership style game for Chris Jones. And I said he's going to break the sack record. Chandler Jones stopped that in Arizona. We got the two sacks from Chris Jones. We have 21 to go, John.
Well, that's never give up, Pete. Never give up.
No.
Under any circumstances.
16 games, 21 sacks to go. We're okay.
I wrote down almost exactly the same thing for my second marinated take from the game. And I wrote about this on Sunday night. And I've just felt more and more strongly about it as the days have gone on. I'll include Frank Clark in this because Clark and Mathieu together were the primary motivating factors in changing the attitude of this defensive unit among the players.
Yeah.
And I think this was the first game that Matthews missed since he became a Chief.
Right.
And Clark has obviously missed some games, but it's the first time they've both been out. And the difference was obvious. And I think the defense should get a lot of credit for getting it figured out in the second half without these two players.
I'll tell you when I got it right, and I'll be happy to explain when I got it wrong. I thought Mike Dana would have more of an impact with Frank Clark out, and some of what I saw in St. Joe did not translate. Now, this was a big spot. It's not going to be the last time Mike Dana has to step up. We know that Frank Clark not only deals with injuries from time to time, sometimes that stomach thing that he has can pop up. I'm sure that Mike Dana will have other opportunities, but Frank Clark is a different animal. And hopefully with some of this rest, when it comes to the Chiefs, that he comes back stronger when it's time for Sunday Night Football against the Baltimore Ravens. All right, John, let's go to your next marinated takeaway.
That was about the usage of the tight ends. There's been a lot of talk since the final cutdown about the Chiefs having four tight ends on the roster and the magical 1-4 personnel where we have four tight ends and one running back on the field. Well, they didn't do that at all on Sunday. I have counted in the detailed snap count information that there were four instances of 1-3 personnel during Sunday's game, which is nice that they've got the personnel to do that and do something with it. We didn't see any 1-4. That doesn't mean we won't. I think we're going to see that at specific instances, but we didn't see any on Sunday.
We want the T-Rex. We want the T-Rex. I'm ready to see it in a regular game, as you can tell from my chanting that I'm doing alone. John, what are you doing?
Well, I agree with you. I think that this is... this is going to be a very interesting thing that the Chiefs are going to do, but I think they're going to do it only in specific circumstances when it matters to them. And we just didn't see those on Sunday.
I think we found out why the Chiefs were going after a Josh Reynolds and a Juju Smith-Schuster, because they're still playing DeMarcus Robinson for the leading snaps of what would be the third option. We didn't see what we thought we might see from Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Mecole Hardman was underwhelming. The Chiefs are still very much looking for a third option. Not to say that one of these guys can't emerge in the passing game, but it was extremely Travis Kelce heavy. It was extremely Tyreek Hill heavy. He had more than 10 targets in this game. And there are going to be better defenses. Not many, because I think the Browns are really good, but there are going to be better defenses playing well when you get to playoff time, because that's usually when you face the better teams, who to an extent are going to be able to curb what Hill and Kelce do. We think, right? That might not come into the Super Bowl. Last year, it didn't really affect the Chiefs until the Super Bowl, but there will be a day when they need some of that supplemental production. And week one, it looked like no one was ready to take those reins quite yet, in my opinion.
Well, we have seen this argument all ever since the game. You know, what are they going to do on the day that they managed to shut down both Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce? And obviously, that's going to be a problem.
Right.
But how do you do that? You do that by double teaming both of those players. And if you do that, then the other problem will take care of itself.
And you can only really rush four in that type of situation, too. So a lot, let's keep in mind, a lot has to go your way. Now, the devil's advocate in that is that there are things that happen in football. You're always going to get an injury in a game, right? Not to assume that one of these guys is going to get injured, but you got to have other players that are ready, essentially. Yeah. I pulled up the targets exactly, and it was more than 11. Tyreek Hill, 11 receptions. It was 15 targets. Travis Kelce had 7 targets. The next guy was Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Mecole Hardman with 3 targets apiece. I think you're going to need at some point one of these other players to step up. And like I said, I think that's why you saw the Chiefs interested in Reynolds. I think that's why you saw the Chiefs interested in Smith-Schuster. And it didn't work out. And now we'll see if one of these other guys can step up during the year.
Well, and Antonio Callaway on that list, too. They thought that maybe he could get something out. They could get something out of him, but then he ended up being injured. We could see him again before the season is out because he was released with an injury settlement. So when he's better, he could end up coming back to the team. So we'll see.
Okay, John, let's go to your final marinated takeaway from this game.
Well, actually, that's all of mine.
Okay.
Because we had the same one in the middle there. Do you have another one?
I have one final thing, and I think you'll like this one, especially, John. Kind of alluded to this in my rapid reaction after the game. And it's just this. Remember when the Chiefs were that team starting Alex Smith or Matt Cassel, and you knew whenever you were playing a Green Bay Packers, a Peyton Manning led Broncos, Tom Brady led Patriots. The only way, and you were good enough to beat him, but the only way you were going to beat him was to have a perfect day. 60 minutes of flawless football. Yeah. Guess what? You are that freaking team. That is what is so cool right now about covering the Kansas City Chiefs. Other teams can come in and have a day. We talked about it. The Browns came in, dominated the first half offensively. They played well enough. They had a key mistake in the third quarter. They didn't really touch the football, essentially. So that was the advantage Chiefs. And then they sort of fell apart in front of the Arrowhead Stadium crowd. They, to an extent, played 50-ish minutes of solid football. If you take away that one mistake by Chubb, which came in the third quarter, teams need to come in and play perfect. They need to play 60 minutes of perfect mistake-free football to beat the Kansas City Chiefs. And that's where you're at with this team. The Chiefs can play bad and still be good teams. That is the Peyton Manning Broncos. That was the Tom Brady Patriots, and I guess to an extent right now, because I didn't think the Bucs played well on Thursday. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers, led by Tom Brady. The old Aaron Rodgers Packers, when they weren't having problems with one another, and Rodgers was still enjoying his time there. You're that team now. And what I think is so cool, John, about this is every single week you've entered the era of Kansas City Chiefs football where you're the measuring stick. The Browns are going to go home and they're going to say, look, we have a moral victory, even though there's no moral victories in football. And we feel pretty good about where we're at. We can't get over that Chiefs hump. That's what every AFC team right now is gunning for. And how cool is it to be a Kansas City Chiefs fan in this era where that should exist? We would expect for the next 5-10 years, as long as Mahomes is here and as long as they keep him happy and keep building around him.
And the reason why this happens was on full display on Sunday, that one play drive, the 75-yard pass to Tyreek Hill. And with players like Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady, you didn't see that often, but we see it pretty regularly with Patrick Mahomes, where when he's motivated to do it and when he's got to do it in that moment, he does. You know, he finds that matchup and fires the rocket to Tyreek Hill, who then makes the defensive back look stupid, so much so that he has to go to the goal. He gets to go to the goal line and think about doing a backflip into the end zone and then decide not to. I mean, that was an embarrassing play,
right,
for the Cleveland defense. And you know, Mahomes can do that. Tyreek Hill can do that. Travis Kelce can do that.
Yeah.
And this is why they're never out of a game. You know, yes, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Aaron Rodgers, those guys do come back in games, but they don't come back in quite the same way that Patrick Mahomes does. And they don't threaten it in quite the same way that Mahomes does. You know, I noticed in the game when at the end of the half where they did the Hail Mary situation and they threw a short pass and set up laterals down the field.
Yeah.
You know, Patrick Mahomes had just throw it up.
Right.
You know, Baker Mayfield, they decided to use the short pass and try and lateral to the goal line, and they almost pulled it off. Give them credit. Right. They did a nice job of running that play. But the Chiefs don't have to do that anymore. They can just let Patrick Mahomes and his receivers figure out a way to get it done.
Yeah, I would say that the pass to Tyreek Hill might have been the best thing we saw all week. Mm-hmm. How about the best Chiefs thing we heard all week? Let's go.
What a segue.
Yes, thank you very much. Let's go to ESPN and the alternate broadcast of Monday Night Football, where it's the Manning brothers and Travis Kelce.
Signals, looking for calls. Tell us kind of what you
mean. Yeah, especially if it's a divisional game or if it's a game we got coming up where we play the Raiders, obviously, twice a year, and then we're playing Baltimore here soon. So, I mean, I'm looking at everything. I'm trying not to, you know, get too technical with it just because we got the Chargers, I believe, this week. Actually, I don't even know. I think we might even play Baltimore next week. I'm lost. I'm lost in the season already.
I mentioned every team.
How does he not know? How does he not know with Monday football coming on, Monday night football coming on, that the Chiefs play the Ravens next week?
I love it. I think it's great that he has no idea, because that's exactly what you want from your team. You don't want your team thinking about, oh my God, we've got to play the Ravens next week, or we've got to play. You don't want them thinking about that. You want them focusing on the preparation that they're being given. I think it's great that Travis Kelce is confused about what the next game is.
If you ever thought that the Chiefs planned for the next team in advance, that has been put to rest. Travis Kelce has been here for 8 years. They go really and truly one day at a time.
Just as they should.
All right. That's it for the Arrowhead Pride Editor's Show. If you'd enjoyed it, I ask you to do the same again. Please rate and review us on Apple iTunes. Coming up this week, it's another new date episode of the Great British Chiefs Show, where Tom Childs will discuss his power rankings among everything else. We have a new Arrowhead Drive. We'll continue on this week with the Arrowhead Pride interview series, a show in BK. Ron, the show Hughley, is expected to be back after Ron. You took a week one vacation. I don't care if it's your 10th wedding anniversary. We have to be focused on the NFL season. What are we doing? I hope you enjoyed your time with us today. For John Dixon, I'm Pete Sweeney. Thank you for joining us on the Arrowhead Pride Editor's Show.